We will not go down without a fight. Today is our Independence Day. Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, not to be confused with President Whitmore of the tremendously awesome 90s movie Independence Day.
Yeah, slow down.
Shall we not ever speak of the sequel that should not exist?
Yeah, that I will never see.
Good, because it will dash your hopes and dreams. Although he tries to give the speech a second time, and it does not work.
I can imagine. And all I'm going to do is imagine. I refuse.
So, welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. And it's been another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. So, Chad, box office. So, Transformers The Last Night continues to tank like a rock domestically. Cars 3 is eliminated from competition. Wonder Woman is just racking up all over the place.
Yeah. It's now officially the highest domestic grosser for DC. So, goes to show you, if you give them a good movie, people will go. And we don't have to hear all this constant bickering. It's been so peaceful. So thank you, Wonder Woman. I get a reprieve from stressing over DC stuff. And you've made a lot of money. Thank you.
Lots of money, Chad.
I didn't check to see how much it was. But I know...
It has now made more than either Suicide Squad or Superman, Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice.
That I knew. And that is so. A year ago, if you'd have told me this, I'd have been like, "You're insane. There's no possible way."
We thought a 3-star match, and we got a 5-star match.
Yeah, and I always figured it would do better than Suicide Squad, but a year ago, you tell me that Batman vs Superman doesn't beat Wonder Woman. I'm like, "You're out of your mind." And then I saw the movie, and like, I want to like you. Even now, I want to like you.
I watch you enough.
I do. I see it. Like, it comes on and I watch it. I have a problem.
And Despicable Me 3 is the reigning box office champ, so Minions Go to Prison is winning all over the place.
You know, surprisingly, I haven't seen that yet, so...
Hey, the best part about it is the fact that it's, like, barely 90 minutes. So, like, really moves.
That is excellent, especially for a kid's movie. I almost had to see Transformers for a second time.
A kid's movie that is getting trashed by everyone.
Why hate it? I mean, most... From everything I've read, most people like, you know, it's a kid's movie. Parents, you should be able to make it through this. And at this point in time, I'm like, okay, that's all I need. Just let me make it through. She'll be fine with everything else. That's all the movie is good. If there's anything worse than that, I ain't gonna see it. Grandparents, here you go. Like Cars 3. I didn't see that one.
But you almost did see Transformers for a second time.
Yes, I almost did. And then grandparents swooped in to save the day. And thankfully they did, because she fell asleep in it.
Like father, like daughter.
Yeah. Well, I didn't fall asleep in this one. I fell asleep in the last one. I stayed up for every agonizing 3 hours of this thing. That was only 2.5 hours.
So, Chad, there was a small movie that came out last weekend. It was called Baby Driver. It was directed by a guy named Edgar Wright, right?
Right.
And it did quite well at the box office. Ended up number 2 to Despicable Me 3.
Yeah, I didn't think it would do that well, but I'm happy to hear it. Even though I haven't seen that yet either.
So, Chad, the cinema nerds, they bash us all the time over the head with the fact that we have to sit through this horrible season of popcorn movies. And, you know, good movies, great movies, like, you know, Steve Jobs, which is different and innovative and pushing the boundaries of what screenplay writing can do, they don't make any money. And people are stupid because they go to see Transformers 5 times, but they won't take 1.5 hours out of their day to go and watch Aaron Sorkin work his magic. That is, like, a horrible sin and atrocity to cinema, right?
According to them, yes.
Yes. I don't want to hear this anymore. This has been tabled, okay? Edgar Wright made a movie that was not a niche movie. It was a heist movie. It was sold as a heist movie. It had an A-list cast. Say what you want to about Simon Pegg, and say what you want to about Michael Cera at the time that he did Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. Those were not A-list cast. This is an A-list cast. This is an A-list cast with a prime summer release date with a simple enough concept. Getaway driver trying to break out of the situation that he's in. And he's listening to music the entire time because he was in a car wreck when he was a kid. So, you know, it's kind of the Romeo and Juliet thing. Two kids fall in love, try to get away from the people who don't want them to be the get-together. Yada, yada. Simple enough premise, easy enough premise, heist movie, easy to sell. This should show you something. They made a good movie. Edgar Wright always makes a good movie, but he made a good mainstream movie. And so he made mainstream money. You cannot ever again yell and scream at the top of your lungs because Transformers The Last Night makes $100 million in a weekend, or $68 million in a weekend, and Edgar Wright's just made 22 or 25 this past weekend and doubled everything he'd ever made domestically on any of his other films.
21.
Yes, take that into your consideration. Take that into your brain. This man has made 4 or 5 films, all of which are like highly revered by the cinema nerd community, and he just doubled in one weekend everything he'd ever made domestically in the United States of America.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. Scott Pilgrim vs. the World is kind of cool and kind of awesome. Hot Fuzz at World's End, at World's End, Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead, all really great movies. Yes, he got screwed out of making a Marvel movie, but you know what? At least he got smart enough to get out before production started. I mean, you cannot continue to do this. You cannot continue to beat us over the head with audiences don't know what good movies are. You cannot do it, because now one of your niche filmmakers just made a mainstream movie and it made mainstream money. So that should tell you something. The problem is, if you're putting Steve Jobs out in the middle of September around a bunch of films that look and feel like Oscar bait, it's not going to stand out. People aren't going to go see it. And by the way, it actually needs a marketing campaign. Baby Driver had an effective marketing campaign. Probably the best marketing campaign he's had on a film.
Yes.
Period. Mm-hmm. The closest thing could probably be Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, but that was marketed to nerds at nerd conventions and such, not necessarily to the community at large. So I never again want to hear this elitism about audiences are stupid, they are low IQ, you give them popcorn movies and they will eat them up, but if you give them real art, then, you know, they will not support it, and therefore less real art gets made. And, you know, let us all hold a funeral for Daniel Day-Lewis, who is retired. So, I mean, like, I don't want to hear this anymore. Victory. You achieved victory. You doubled the amount of money Edgar Wright has ever made in his career in the United States of America. Have fun. Crown, you know, at the end of the year, when you do your top 10 list and Baby Driver's on there, just, like, smile and hold up a little stat sheet that shows the box office and stop talking. Thank you.
I'm not going to add anything to that rant. Summed up perfectly. You know, they're still going to be hoity-toity, right?
You give audiences a good movie that is easy concept movie in a middle of a summer where it looks different from anything else that's out there. You market it properly to the proper demographics, and you get good reviews, and people will show up.
I thought it would do well, and I thought it would do well for like an Edgar Wright movie. I didn't know it was going to be like number two, just because
it had the proper rollout and build, because the first screening was at South by Southwest in March. So word had been circulating around since March. So you kind of had word to be on the lookout for this film, and then they bumped it from an August, which is his typical release window, up to the middle of the early period of July, and so, or late June. So, you know, you had more eyeballs on it. But, like, this idea that, oh, Steve Jobs, which is a terrifically inventive work of fiction by Aaron Sorkin, which raises the bar, finished 178th out of 370 movies that were released at the box office last year. And so, you know, meanwhile, crap like what Marvel puts out finishes in the top five box office for the entire year. That is injustice. That is unfair because, you know, one is a work of art that belongs in a museum and the other one is just, you know, trailer trash. And we need to move past that kind of rhetoric because, you know, there it's a symbiotic relationship. We said this on this podcast many, many times. It's a symbiotic relationship. Big movies do well. That gives studios more money that they can funnel into smaller projects, which give more art indie artists opportunities to learn and grow.
Yes. It would really just be simple if people, like, you don't have to like the popcorn summer movies. That doesn't mean you have to hate on people that like it. Just like what you like, and clearly what you're like, you like the art, and it gets recognized in Oscar time, and you have that time to shine. Don't hate the big movies.
Speaking of the Academy, they added 700 members, and Whoopi Goldberg is now a member of the Board of Governors.
Oh, really? Like, I knew they added people. I didn't know they added to the Board of Governors. There were just so many people, I didn't bother looking it all up, but that's good for Whoopi, and it's good for all the other people that are in there. I know we got an influx of superheroes and people of color, which is always good.
Yeah, the more diversity.
Yes, more diversity, the better. Hope nobody has a problem with that. You really shouldn't. But
I mean, this I saw that, and I saw that number, and I saw the fact that it had doubled, and I was like, you can't do this anymore. You can't. You give people quality movies and you market them properly and people will go to see them.
I mean,
look at Ex Machina. People went and showed up for Ex Machina.
Yeah, I still haven't seen that.
Live, Die, Repeat. I mean,
then, yes. But I think
you give people good movies, genre movies or not, people will show up.
Yeah.
Even if it ends up like something like Get Out or Split, where, you know, they praise those movies because, look, they had to make this movie on $3 million and they super return on investment. And you know how they got that recognition? They got that recognition from screening their rear ends off and people talking at festivals about that movie and building word of mouth so that it became an event and a happening and you had to go see Get Out or you had to go see Split because it was the thing.
I don't know. Maybe they won't be happy until, in their minds, their movies make the kind of money these movies make.
And that's their prerogative. Their idea is that, you know, that high art of cinema is not being fully funded or fully recognized or fully represented. And my thing is, like, I went to go see The Beguiled. I paid money to go to Perkins Row, because it's the art house cinema in our town, and go to see Sofia Coppola. And I have actually seen it twice now, because I love Sofia Coppola, and I will support anything she does, even though she, like, nearly killed she did kill the Godfather franchise for their acting in Godfather Part 3. But Virgin Suicides is an amazing movie. Her Marie Antoinette movie is fantastic. Bling Ring looks really pretty, doesn't have and tries to say things about social commentary, doesn't really do it that well. But all of her movies have been fantastic and have had some meaning to them. Lost in Translation is a touchstone. I just, you know, to say that I can't like The Beguiled or go to see The Beguiled two or three times and go see Spider-Man Homecoming two or three times doesn't compute.
See, but you're going to be the exception because, like, those kind of movies, the high art movies, I mean, they are art. They're meant to be appreciated. But a lot of them are really, really heavy. And a lot of people will go see them, but they're only going to see them once.
Yeah, Philomena, for example. Like, it's a movie about a woman who had to, you know, had her child forcibly taken from her, you know?
Yeah, you say that. And I'm like, I want to see it. I'm only going to see it this once. Moonlight. I love Moonlight. I've seen it once, and that's probably I'll probably see it again, but it's going to be a long time.
Remember that movie beat out La La Land.
I know, and that's I wanted it to. Though I have more fun with La La Land. I wanted Moonlight to win.
And technically they both won.
Yeah. But like, I have more fun with these summer blockbusters, but that doesn't mean I don't like these high art movies more. It's just that they're like museum pieces, and I go and see them in a museum, but then I want to have like stuff that
I want to go to the arcade.
Yeah, and I will go to the arcade more than I go to the museum. That doesn't mean I don't like the museum. I just like the arcade too. And it has more replay value. So just because your movies don't make this kind of money doesn't mean people don't appreciate them like you do.
Well, the other hard part of it too ends up being this whole deal about, well, you know, Edgar tried to go make a big tentpole blockbuster movie, and them Marvel folk, they ran him off because he was too creative and too unique, and they wanted to hammer his voice out and drain his creative freedom.
Okay, so all movies are a collaboration of some form. Yes, the bigger the movie, the more there's more collaboration. For Edgar's story, it's just the fact that both sides saw the writing on the wall. Edgar wanted to make his movie. Marvel, because this, and that was fine 8 years ago when Edgar's movie would have been the third one up, and there was nothing else going on. Second one up.
They announced Ant-Man and Iron Man at the same Comic-Con 2006.
Okay, so yeah, it would have been the second one up. He could have went nuts, but it was 8 years later. They had stuff going on. 12 films in. Yeah, they had other stuff going on. Edgar can't exactly make this a straight Edgar movie, so Edgar doesn't want to budge, and that's his right. The studio doesn't want to budge, that's their right. They split ways before it got to shooting. That's fine. Because somebody wants to go make a studio movie doesn't mean that they're hammering out their creative process, and they understand what system they're going to be working in, and that's fine with them.
So, Chad, safety not guaranteed. I lent it to you so that you could see it.
God damn it.
So that you could see it, and so that you could see that Trevorrow has actually made a good movie. Because, you know, Book of Henry is getting trashed, literally. Yeah. And, you know, Jurassic World is not great. But he went from Jurassic World, from Safety Not Guaranteed to Jurassic World. That is a big jump. And so I'd rather. So it's not like these art house movies or these indie movie directors are not getting a chance to make the paycheck. They're getting the opportunity.
Yeah.
The guy who's J.A. Boyega.
Bayona.
Bayona, the guy who directed A Monster Calls, which was another fantastic, heavy drama, Oscar-type movie a year ago, got called up to do Jurassic World 2.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he'll do that. He'll get a paycheck for it, and he'll go back to making indie movies.
And there's nothing wrong with anybody getting paid if they're doing something they want to do and they understand what they're getting into doing it.
How many directors do we know who do the one for them, two for them type deal?
I mean, their patron saint, Chris Nolan, that's what he did. Batman Begins, one for me. Dark Knight, I think it was Inception. Dark Knight Rises, and when then he was done with Interstellar, but he alternated them. Why not? The actors do it. Why can't the directors? Everybody wants to get paid. You shouldn't begrudge anybody getting paid.
Capital.
Yeah.
Capital. Good old Ridley Scott.
And I'm gonna
hit this T-ball out the park so that I can go make more alien movies.
In Ridley Scott's case, it actually was a T-ball. Like, that was put on the highest setting, right at his adjusted, like, they took his measurements from, like, we're gonna put it right here. So you just tap it and it's going out the park. But he goes, he makes that movie. Guess it makes all kind of money, and the studios are like, hey, Ridley Scott, you made all this money, and you've made money before in the past. We're going to forget these dark ages right here. That's the Gladiator before the Martian. So we're just going to let you do whatever you want. That's what happens. You do one of these big movies, it's successful. You can do whatever you want unless you're Josh Trank, because you made one that was terrible. But then again, he's back down the street in New Orleans with Tom Hardy making his Al Capone movie, so yeah, go make one. Even if it sucks, you can still get a second chance.
The man got out of director's jail.
Yeah,
and we thought he was in the Guantanamo Bay portion of director's jail.
Yeah, it's like the raft from Captain America. Like, I thought he was, like, in the deepest, darkest parts of that.
He was right there with the Abomination.
Yeah. And we've seen more of Josh Trank than we have with the Abomination. It's been 8 years for the Abomination. Josh Trank is like, I'm going to do 6 months and I'm out.
And, you know, my point is that I'm tired of this narrative of separation. That, you know, there's high art and then there's not art. And they're all artistic endeavors. Everybody does it with an intention of making something that's meaningful to them. Hundreds upon hundreds of people work on these films, above the line and below the line, to create something meaningful, and to distill them down to nincompoops, because, you know, they don't have serious drama in them, is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's about taste. Just because you don't have a taste for this doesn't mean that something's wrong with somebody that does. Because, like, we go to all the genre movies, but we also try to make the other. Brian makes more of them than I do, but we appreciate those movies too. So you can't, dumb on one hand.
I make them because I keep up and I follow with what comes out of the festival scene. And so I know what to look for. And we only have the one art house cinema in the city.
Yeah.
Chances are, if it expands to more than 500 theaters, Perkins Row is going to have it. Bluebonnet won't have it, but Perkins Row will.
Yeah.
And so I at least will be able to look at that theater and know where it is. Great example would be that horrible Foxhole movie that John Cena did with
Aaron Taylor-Johnson. Johnson.
The Wall.
That came out already?
That came out and died. But it was at Perkins Row for like a week, and so I got to see it. Like, and that's the kind, also a big issue is expansion and number and exposure. You know, Edgar's Baby Driver was in like 2,000 or 3,000 theaters. Like, that's different from something that has to have a limited run in order to qualify for the Oscars. And so, you know, something that is in the running to be an Oscar nominee here doesn't show up to like late January, early February. Mm-hmm. It may get released in other December, places,
yeah.
But it doesn't get here till like January or February. And that's an issue when you don't expand nationwide until really late.
This is true.
So.
Also, before we move on, I would like to thank Transformers for coming out when it did to create this nice little vacuum for Baby Driver to just drive right on in there. Because if it was a normal Transformers movie, I don't know if it does quite as well. But since this one was, you know, universally panned and people hate it, it was basically Despicable Me 3. So the family went to that. And everybody else was like, I want to go to the movies. Do I want to see the movie that sucks or the movie that I've heard is really good? They both have cars in them, so really good wins out. So thank you, Transformers.
All right. So, Chad, speaking of our good friend Josh Trank, he used to work at Fox. He tried to make a Fantastic Four movie for Fox. Fox has just released a whole bunch of release dates between June of 19 and March of 2021. Would we care to speculate on what some of those films might be?
I'm doing decompressing exercise in my head right now, because when I saw this news, I'm like, wait, so they have X-Men. So we got another Deadpool, we got X-Force, we got X-Men, we got New Mutants. That's four movies. There are no more Wolverine movies. But there's six dates, so we're missing something. So let's throw out some other random X-Men movie. So that's five. So what's going to be this sixth one?
So there's, I mean, you got Deadpool 2 and Deadpool 3, as well as an X-Force movie. That's three.
Well, this will be from 2019 on, so we can't count any of the things coming out next year.
Okay.
So Deadpool 2 is out, X-Force is out, well, not X-Force.
And New Mutants.
New Mutants, and they're and straight up X-Men.
Dark
out.
Phoenix.
Yeah. But we can probably count a Deadpool sequel.
Deadpool 3, X-Force.
Let's another X-Men movie, probably another New Mutants movie. And then, yeah, so we have four X-Men movies, and then we have these two random dates.
There could be an X-23 movie somewhere up in there.
It could be that. Let's say by some miracle they get Gambit off the ground. It could be that. I don't think we'll get both X-23 and Gambit. So let's just say one of those. So we get 5. So that leaves us with 1/6 mystery date. And we've kind of exhausted all of their X-Men properties. So when I see that, I'm like, well, Fox only has X-Men and they have... Well, and they have... What they shouldn't have is Fantastic Four. But they have Fantastic Four. And there's this extra date just sitting there. So I'm like, son of a bitch. They're gonna try to do this. And this is coming right off the heels of that stupid rumor with them focusing on the kids. And it just seems to line up that they're really going to try to do this again. And I think they're idiots if they do.
So, Chad, remind me. There was a point in time where, before Amazing Spider-Man 2 had come out, that release dates had been set for a Venom movie, a Sinister Six movie, and I want to say they were... Also, they'd also already dated Amazing Spider-Man 3 at that point.
Probably, yeah.
So... All those dates Sony planted flags in and, like, had, and, like, even went so far as to hire Drew Goddard to work on a Sinister Six movie. That's why he had to leave The Martian.
Mm-hmm.
So you can plant flags and even hire creative teams to work on movies, and then suddenly those dates can go away.
I mean, it's the same thing with DC. They've planted all these flags, and we're probably not going to see the light of day for that. But the thing with Fox is that they have their X-Men franchise. Say what you will about Apocalypse. That's like an outlier right now. All of the rest of them have been like successes. So there's no reason to think that they plant flags that they don't have things to put there, with the exception of Fantastic Four, which has been...
My point is there could still be a deal contractually made in that release date met. Sony put out a date for Homecoming, and Marvel adjusted its schedule. Because remember, Spider-Man Homecoming was not in that nice big slate announcement they did at the El Capitan Theater in Los Angeles. Isn't it crazy to think that, you know, we thought that the end of that timeline seemed so far away, and here we are now.
Like in the middle of it?
And not only are we in the middle of it, like, Captain Marvel's going to start shooting in the beginning of next year.
Yeah,
like we are almost to the end of phase three.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, it seems so far off, and now, you know, it's here. Things are in production.
Yeah.
I mean, there are 3 films for 18 are already underway, or going to be underway shortly, because Ant-Man and the Wasp and Black Panther is already finished. Black Panther's already finished. Infinity War is ongoing. And
Ant-Man and the Wasp is about to start shooting. Yeah, it's...
And then there are 19 movies. They're starting creative work on Captain Marvel.
And Homecoming 2 is in that, right?
Right.
Yeah, and they start shooting that next year, too.
Right.
So, yeah, it's... It's pretty
nice. And there's nothing confirmed for 2020.
Yeah, which this Fox thing is, like, really... I hadn't thought of the angle of maybe Fox's... worked out to deal with Marvel. I just thought
there's gonna be a Marvel slate announcement at some point for the 3 dates they have secured for 2020.
If Marvel has Fantastic Four and they struck a deal with Fox,
I don't think it could have been kept quiet at this point.
I don't think it could have been kept quiet, but I think they would have tried to keep it quiet until they want to make a firm announcement, of which I don't think they would do until at least after Infinity War, the first one. Avengers 3.
Well, I don't think negotiations would even begin until after you see the Homecoming dollar amounts.
Yeah, well, I mean, with the...
Which seemed like a formality at this point.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, I wouldn't think maybe, like, soft negotiations start, like, you see the reception that that Homecoming has right now. It's already certified on Rotten Tomatoes with, like, a 93 or something insane stuff like that. They could be like, hey, Fox, your Fantastic Four movies, they never sniffed anything like that. And then the receipts start coming in, and then heavy negotiations happen. I just always assumed, I didn't think Fox was smart enough to make a deal with Marvel. I thought they would just be like, I'm done. Give me whatever X-Men characters or things that I want from X-Men and take it and give me some cash, and I'm done with this. But maybe they are... But I don't know, because then...
Why would you put this kind of feelers out there about, we're going to go back to a family-friendly version with the kids?
I don't get it for them, because, yeah, other people can put feelers out and the internet can turn on them, but with Fox, at this point...
You have no goodwill.
None. Like, they can show up and make a good movie. Most people are still not going to go see it because they're like, you fooled me not once, not twice. Three times. Three. I'm not giving you the magical four. No. You can take this movie and go shove it. So, they can try this if they want. Like, I'll go see it because I'm a glutton for punishment. But most people are like, I'm done. I'm completely done with you and Fantastic Four. You put Marvel in front of it, I'll give it a shot. But you were done. So I don't get their... They have nothing to stand on. They've lost all goodwill. All their goodwill is firmly with X-Men. And they don't need anything else. They can just run with that. They can stop losing money on Fantastic Four. So I don't get their angle for this. Unless they've worked out a deal with Marvel. In which case, now that I'm thinking about it, because it's Fox, their deal will probably be like, so, we're putting up no money. I mean, we're putting up the money. We want nothing to do with this creatively. We just want the receipts. So, go ahead. Go nuts. Because that's how... I mean, they got X-Men for nothing. They swindled them there. Like, well, we'll just keep doing this with y'all. They're important to y'all. They're not that important to us. But we like money. So...
Toy receipts.
Yeah.
Merchandising sales.
I would have... I don't know if Fox's merchandising deals is the same as Sony's, because Sony gave Marvel the rights back to merchandising like some idiots. Fox, I'm pretty sure they still keep theirs, which is part of the reason why Marvel doesn't make any Fantastic Four stuff. You know, just strangle them out of that. We don't get it. We get a little cut. We want it all. We'll just cut you out.
All right. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with those dates. I'm seeing here 3 dates for 2020, 1 for 2021, 2 dates for 2019.
Yep.
So, 2 in 19, 3 in 20, and 1 in 2021.
But let's see, when did that crappy Fantastic Four movie come out?
2015.
So 2 years ago, they have 5 years to start production on another Fantastic Four movie without the rights rolling back. So, what are we in? So 2022?
2020 would be 5 years.
Okay, 2020. So, well, no, they have 5 years from now. Because I think it's 7 years total. So we already got 2 years. We got 5 years left. So I think 2022 is about where it's at. So, yeah, we'll see. Fox, please don't be stupid. Please. Please.
All right. So, Chad, speaking of Marvel, we'll move across the way to the House of Mouse. We got some news on Captain Marvel. Would you like to hear the news on Captain Marvel?
I would.
Samuel L. Jackson has been spotted in Atlanta prepping. So General Fury, Nick Fury, will be in the Captain Marvel movie. Your thoughts? Appearing on cast list as, you know, second billing. So.
Yeah, I did see that he may be co-starring. It's interesting, but yet not surprising.
We don't know where he is. I mean... He hasn't shown up since Age of Ultron, which is, what, 3 movies now? Because you got Ant-Man, Civil War, and then Doctor Strange. Mm-hmm. And he wouldn't show up in Guardians, so... He's not in Homecoming.
No, he's not. Even though they wanted... The idea was for him instead of Tony at one point, but, you know, that switched up because of Civil War. It just makes me question the direction they're going to go. Because, you know, in the comics, like, right now... So, there's regular S.H.I.E.L.D., which does all the Earthbound stuff. And there's another organization called S.W.O.R.D., which does, like...
Which has been introduced on the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show, I think.
They hinted at it, but I think that's the way the TV people wanted to go. But, like, right after the show aired, they're like, no, this isn't S.W.O.R.D. So I think what happened is that they were going that way, and then the film division came and was like, hey, we need that. And they were like, oh. And I don't know what they're going to do now. So.
I just have this meme in my head of Feige telling Perlmutter no, and just like his face sinking in his head down.
No. After all the time having to answer to Perlmutter, he got on Skype. He was like, Ike, Nah, y'all can't have this. Sorry. Bye. Wait, wait. That's what I want to see. And then click. So, yeah, in the comics, Kara runs S.W.O.R.D. And it makes sense because she's Captain Marvel and her powers are based on Kree and whatnot. So, they could go that way and have that dynamic of Fury being, you know, representative of S.H.I.E.L.D., her being representative of S.W.O.R.D., and they have to do some stuff together. So, I'm just intrigued by how that direction is going to work and how they're going to do it. I mean, they've been saying they want to tap more into their cosmic side. So this is a good way to... Carol's a good character to do it with, but I never thought they would bring Fury along for that.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought it was interesting that he'd be back. I mean, it'd be his first, like, long-term role in the Marvel Cinematic Universe since Winter Soldier.
Yeah. So. I mean, he's in the next Avengers, but, you know...
We don't know of how much.
Yeah, there's like...
I mean, the guy's supposedly dead, so, I mean...
Well, I mean, the Avengers know he's not dead. He died in Winter Soldier.
And Captain America knows he's not dead. No one else does, really.
No, he came back Age of Ultron, so they all know.
They don't know Coulson's not
dead. They don't know Coulson's not, and they never will, apparently. There's like 35 plus characters in Avengers anyway, so who knows how long he's going to be on screen. So, but also, what is intriguing is that this is like one of the first movies after Phase 3.
No.
This is still Phase 3? Oh, yeah, that's right. It's in between the two. Mm-hmm. So, never mind. Scrap that. Because I was going to go on this thing about, you know, all the other original cast members seemed like they were about ready to take a greatly reduced role and only show up sparingly, if at all. And he would be a part of that, so but he doesn't appear to
be. Dude, sound like an 18 film contract.
So. Yeah, I mean it's Samuel Jackson's like, oh y'all want me to work? Y'all in Atlanta? I live in Atlanta. I don't have to go nowhere. Oh, and all these movies. Yeah, I'm here. I'm just here. We cool. All
right, you know there's also somebody who's going to be in Avengers: Infinity War, and she will make her much heralded return this week. And let us all sing the praises and rejoice. There will be a Spider-Man Homecoming podcast in which I will legitimately lose my mind in the best way possible.
We're going to be sitting in a theater full of people that are geeking out, and we get a proper MCU Spider-Man. And you're going to be sitting next to me waiting for her to rock across the screen. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not going to look at you. I'm going to keep looking at the screen. When you have your moment, I'm just going to be like, I don't know. I'm just here for Spider-Man.
All right. So let's move on to DC. Matt Reeves is on the production, on the PR tour for Apes. Your thoughts on his noir-driven detective version of Batman?
So my first thought is, hell yeah, that's what I want to see.
Pretty much what everybody's been asking for a while.
My second thought was, wait, that's what Ben said he was going to do in the first place. So, maybe they're not throwing out the baby with the bathwater on all this thing.
Maybe he just didn't want to work, didn't want to direct it. He's going to star in it, maybe he just didn't want to direct it.
Yeah, and I'm sure Matt Reeves is going to come in and he's going to, you know, put his own spin on it. But it seems like the vision, this is the vision for Batman, for this Batman movie, and everybody's on one accord of it. How they pull it off might be different, but... This is the.
And as far as Joe Mangiello is concerned, they still have Death Knot as the villain, as far as he knows. So.
Yeah, now that I don't.
He said that yes.
Okay, well, I mean, I want him in it. I don't know how Matt Reeves feels about him.
Well, see, like I love the Arkham Asylum idea, like Batman having to fight his way out of Arkham on one night.
So I like that idea, but I also like this idea of like Batman actually like
having to put do detective work.
Yeah, and you could still do that in one night, and you could still involve Deathstroke. But I don't think Deathstroke would be the main guy at that point. I think maybe he'll show up. Maybe he'll be like the big muscle, and he shows up a few times. But there'll be somebody else behind, like you know, pulling the strings.
I'm interested to see. I mean, he's definitely won my attention over with his two Apes films, and you know he has the chops to do it, and Cloverfield wasn't half bad either, so
yeah, the way his direction in the second Apes, and we'll see the third one in a couple weeks, it's I think he will work well for
replace
what he wants to go
Caesar
for
with Batman.
Yeah, pretty much. And I think that we get a kick-ass movie, and that's kind of what I want.
Yeah. It helps the Murder Bat reputation.
Man, we can get rid of the Murder Bat. We can just forget it all happens. Like, again, you need to just prep yourself, because there's going to be a whole lot of, we just forgot this stuff.
So there's going to be a whole lot of, like, the Men in Black with the little...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Him running his car from a building through a truck that... The front end of his car, like, plows clean through a guy right in the front of the screen. Yeah, that never happened. Never happened.
Never happened. Just like Wonder Woman never vowed that she had left humanity for 100 years.
Nope. Nope. Just small talk during the battle.
Actually, I'm at a graveside, actually. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah, yeah. See, she's grieving. She didn't know what she was saying. She just said something.
So, speaking of saying something that doesn't have much meaning, Jordan Vaught Rogers, he of the Kong Skull Island fame, last seen hanging out in an inner pool in the middle of water with Gareth Edwards, said that he had pitched Warners on a Superman Red Sun movie.
Yeah, this...
talks a lot about, you know, parallel universes, and maybe it's time to make that step from, you know, cinematic universes to parallel universes, and...
So, for people that don't know, Superman Red Son is a graphic novel written by Ron Mark Millar.
Mark Millar, who routinely believes that if he would, like, his head would explode if every one of his comic books aren't made into movies.
And he's got a good track record. I mean, Wanted, Kick-Ass, Kingsman. That's all him. So he wrote this comic in which, instead of Superman landing in Kansas...
he lands in Moscow.
Yeah.
Which is very apropos right now.
Yeah, it really is. So, I mean, outside of everything else, it's not a bad idea to want to do that now. But we got... DC has other issues. Vaught Robertson said that he pitched DC on the idea of doing the Red Sun movie.
And they told him no.
Yes.
And then Miller comes back on Twitter and is like, they're putting it out there to directors.
Yeah, and he's like, I've heard from several people that they're taking pitches for this movie. And he's like, really? I just did this like a few months ago. And they said no. He's like, you might want to get back with them. And his whole thought process is, maybe it's time for the comic book genre to diverse some more and have, like, one shots. Which,
or multiverses.
Yeah. I wouldn't go multiverses, but, you know, have self-contained stories. And that's fine. It would be... Well, the idea is fine. In execution, it would be fine if Marvel wanted to do it because they're...
Chad.
Set up.
Chad, we kill Sony on a regular basis on this podcast for trying to make a Venom movie outside of the MCU and taking things away from MCU proper and help trying to get people to understand that they can make a Venom movie with no Spider-Man. Because Feige has come out and said, no Tom Holland.
Well, that kind of goes into my point. Like, Marvel set up, they have an established universe. So if they've said, hey, this movie right here, one shot with Captain America doing some stuff in this other world, like Hydra Cap that's going on right now in the comics. This is a one shot. It has nothing to do with the main continuity. This is just this one thing. A separate guy's playing Captain America and all that. It might confuse people at first, but it would be a way to diversify stuff. And Marvel has enough...
Marvel's done enough one-shots that have been impressive on the DVDs that have made people laugh.
But they're all in that same continuity. This stuff will be completely separate. So, Cap can die in this because it has no effect on MCU Cap. And while the time is ripe for a Red Sun, given our political climate right now, DC is not on firm footing at all.
They're not set up to do that yet.
They haven't set up their Superman yet. They've introduced him to lukewarm responses, and then they decide to shove a bony spear through his chest and now have to bring him back. They're not in a position to do these splintered universe things. So that's my whole thing with it. Like, I don't mind the idea. They're just not ready for that yet. They need to get their regular house in order before they can go off and do all these special things.
True enough. So, Chad, there's one more thing on this rundown. Would you like to tell the good people of America and Germany and all in Australia and many other countries around the world what's left on our rundown?
So, the most electrifying man in all of entertainment, released the trailer for his next movie, which is entitled Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle.
What occurred when this trailer hit the internet?
Well, I don't know about everybody else, but I know I sent it to you, and you were just, let's say, not amused by it.
Okay, so Chad, I am going to be very, very glad that Episode 8 is going to take a lightsaber and chop the head off of this movie. And I'm going to watch that head roll down the steps like the Pink Power Ranger in that fan film that was made. That's what I want to happen to this movie. This is a sequel. They call this a sequel. Do you know what happens in this trailer, Chad? People go to the basement for detention. And they find a Super Nintendo. And they play a video game. And they get sucked into the video game. And their avatars are artificially, like, manifestations of different people. Like, the white girl is now The Rock.
No, no. The white girl is Jack Black.
Yeah, the white girl is now Jack Black. The nerdy kid is now The Rock. Mm-hmm. Like, it's playing on superficiality. And now they're in the jungle. They're in the world of Jumanji. And now they have to get out. So the real world is not at all going to be affected. These kids are not at all going to be affected because, ideally, they're still sitting in front of their freaking TV screen playing their Super Nintendo while the rest of the world goes about doing things until they finish the game, in which case they go back into their regular bodies and live out their current present, and no one ever knows they were down in that basement for a year and a half. Like, no! No, Chad! There was a scene at the end of the original Jumanji movie in which two kids are walking along the French beach, and they find the game beating its drum, and they pick it up and go, woo! And then they go off and they play the game! And you know what happens when you play the game in the real world and, you know, not as a video game that you get sucked into? It means you get scenes of, like, craziness happening around you in the real world. Scenes like rhinos and zebras and giraffes running down the street. Monkeys swinging around a sporting goods store. Crazy hunters coming in with rifles trying to shoot people in said sporting goods store. Cops having to fight off monkeys that are driving their cop cars. A monkey driving a cop car is funny, Chad. It is hilarious. And yet we will be deprived of that because now they have to go into the jungle. And they have to deal with their issues like they're in a John Hughes movie. And they have to do it in the jungle with these avatars of grown men pretending to be the avatars of high schoolers. And this is supposed to be a sequel, which has no characters, no relations, no ties whatsoever to the original, except for a name and a phrase, a saying, that is on the side of the game that they read off in the original. That set the tone for what you have to do. This looks nothing like a sequel. This looks like a reboot. This looks like somebody who just got out of the Transformers writer's room came out and said, wait, I went to the bathroom and I had gas and I had a really good idea. Let's take that Jumanji thing, but instead of a board game, let's make it a video game that looks like a Super Nintendo, and let's make all the kids go into the video game this time. That's what looks like it happened. Don't call it a sequel. Do not say that you're honoring Robin Williams' legacy. Don't do that. Just reboot yourself the way you were going to do with the previous director. And put it out there and let Episode decapitate you and you make no money whatsoever. And this franchise goes back to being dead until someone figures out that you go back and you get the two French kids and they play the game. And then you see monkeys hanging off the freaking Eiffel Tower.
You done?
Where's the Tylenol?
Okay, so, needless to say, I don't feel as passionately about this as you do.
There were two kids on a beach! Like, it's teed up for you. I get that it's not 1998 anymore, but you could have done this at any point. If this is such a branded IP that you wanted to make, into a franchise again, you could have gone back and said, look, the end, they throw the game into the river, it washes up on this French beach, and these kids pick it up. There you go.
So
you could even have Kirsten Dunst be one of the moms of one of the kids.
Have you heard her talk about movies she's been in that they've, you know, tried to do sequels or reboots to? She's not a fan.
No, she's not, but I guarantee you, if you just asked her to be the mom in Jumanji, she'd be okay with it.
I'm not a fan of Kirsten Dunst in anything right now. So
The Beguiled is amazing. Fargo is amazing. She is on a career comeback. Marie Antoinette with Sophia. Sophia brings out the best in her.
I know, but I'm petty and she talks about Spider-Man. So I'm
yeah,
not, I'm,
yes, yes. We all know your Mary Jane issues.
Yeah. But, so, I agree that they didn't have to name this Jumanji because it's...
No, they had to name it Jumanji. But the atmosphere around this movie, under the old director and under the current director, was that this was a reboot. And it wasn't until Robin Williams died where Rock comes out and starts being like, we're going to honor the legacy. This is a sequel. This is not a reboot. This is a sequel. No, sir. There is nothing in this. I'm going to have to look at Kevin Hart run around in the jungle screaming as the avatar for a little Asian person. Like, this doesn't quite work.
Tall black dude.
Okay, whichever. So, no, this is not a sequel. This is a reboot. Again, this is somebody who got out of the Transformers room and had gas and thought this would be a good way to reboot the Jumanji property. This is not a sequel.
Okay, so if it comes down to if it's a sequel or if it's a reboot, I mean, yeah, I get that point. I don't... If they can convince me that this thing is still this game, that since we're dealing with magic, did magic things...
No, there's no... Because... The whole point of the game in the book, which is a very short book.
Yeah, I've read it.
The whole point of the game is that you have to play the game in order to make all the chaos go away. And you have to finish the game for all the chaos to go away. And you have to solve their riddles, and you roll the dice, and your piece moves automatically, and every new riddle brings a new opportunity for new danger. If you're just running through the jungle and it's like, well, we have to get to this... to this side of the island. If we get to this side of the island, the game ends. And all we have to do is, like, get around all these crazy people who are, you know, hunters who are in the jungle, or we have to survive a meerkat abduction or something. Like, but we have to just get to the other end of the island. Kong Skull Island. You know, we've got to get to the other side of this island in 3 days. You know, same type deal. If we can get to the other side of the island, the game ends, and we can get back to our normal lives. And by the time we get back to our normal lives, we'll all be bonded and great friends, and John Hughes will be happy and smiling in his grave.
So, yeah, I think that, again, this comes from me not being so attached to it. I don't really care that it's not a board game, as long as they, like...
But there's no riddles. There's no riddles. Right. There's no point. The way they make this set up in the movie is basically, hi... So now we're all sucked into this game. We have to... We were all in detention together in a Breakfast Club-type situation. Now we all have to come together as one to make it to the other side of this island to escape.
Okay, from the trailer presented to us, I would agree there probably aren't that many... There probably aren't riddles, which, you know, how you feel about that is...
Because the whole point was every time you rolled that dice... There was a chance that some crazy stuff was going to happen. And you were going to have to overcome that and play around that other crazy stuff in order to finish the game. And once you finish the game, literally, you could go back to being Robert Parrish in 1965 and live out your life with the full knowledge of what had happened while no one else in the world does.
I mean,
and they'll still keep that more than likely.
Yeah, they don't know what happened.
They'll keep that more than likely. Where, like, they'll get sucked out of the game after they get finished, or they make it to the other side of the island, or whatever. And then they'll be, like, best friends for life, because they had this bonding experience, and they won't be angsty teenagers in detention anymore.
Oh, I mean, yeah, that is definitely the outcome of this movie. It's just... The whole way that... The mechanism for how this is going to work. I understand that, you know, in the original, it's all about the board game, and the things that... are affected because of that, and you have to go through it. putting it in a video game with the nature of how kids are today, it makes, I see why they would go that route. So I'm not upset about it. But a lot of it has to do with me not really caring that they,
it's a different manifestation. And yeah. it takes you, it presents other challenges for how to achieve what the point of a Jumanji movie is.
Now, with that said, with them being sucked in the video game, if they're trying to say that, you know, this video game is the same, is basically what happens when Alan Parrish got sucked in the game, this is that, they're going to have their challenges of making it like, okay, the correlations to what actually happens in the board game. I don't know how they do that. In all honesty, I don't expect this movie to be good.
What they're going to do is they're going to have the kids just stationary, sitting there on their controllers while their avatars are going. And so as soon as the game's over, they get out of the game and they go return to their normal bodies, playing the games in the same position they were when they left.
I have to watch the trailer again. I only watched it one time. I think their physical bodies, like, they're probably going to do some dumb digitizing thing and they go. So there's actually won't be anybody sitting there. It'll just be, they got digitized and they came out looking
and
like
they're in the basement where no one's going to.
Nobody's going to come looking for them. So I would expect this whole thing to take place over a couple hours that they're supposed to be in detention. So really my whole point is, I know there are people that like Jumanji. I like Jumanji too, but I'm open to letting them fall on their face. So if they fall on their face, then you know you can rip them to shreds. But
I'm not gonna rip them to shreds for falling on their face. I'm saying, like, there was a easy way to do this, and a easy way to say, hey, board games are relics, but you know what? They can still be fun.
I mean, yeah, you could have done that, but I mean, you've seen how
there were kids on a French beach.
Okay, so we're talking to what formerly was the Transformers crowd. Because clearly, that crowd will stand out. So, I don't know how the board game translates to the Transformers crowd. Playing video games translates to them very much.
And it would make sense that the game itself would adapt.
Yes.
But, at the same time, if you do the video, if you do the, you could either do the video game on a console, like a PS4, or you have your smartphone, you have your tablet. Oh, this new app popped up on my phone. What is it? Jumanji? And you have the board game right there. And you have to play the board game the way you do life or anything else on your phone or on your tablet.
Mm-hmm. That's not a bad idea.
And then you have to carry the tablet around with you. The board game is now the tablet. And so if you drop the tablet or the tablet breaks, you're stuck in Jumanji forever.
I have ideas about that. But, yeah. I don't know. They went this route.
They fired a director and started over from scratch to accommodate The Rock to do this.
Well, so Theron is the rope. It's like they wanted to do this. They wanted to have The Rock because he's The Rock. And they want to go this heavy. This is going to be a heavy action movie with ridiculousness that The Rock does. So I'm betting that's a large part of why we have it this way.
And I get that there's a San Andreas sequel coming at some point, but
why? California's gonna fall off the earth? Is that what's gonna happen to the next one?
To me, I'm fine with it if you reboot it and you say you're rebooting it and say that this is the best idea that we could come up with because a guy from the Transformers room had a brain fart and pitched us this idea and we gave him $1 million. I get that. But when you start talking about we're going to honor the legacy of Robin Williams, we're going to make this as a sequel, it's a direct sequel, it takes place after the events of the original, but none of the original cast members are in it, the game itself is now a video game, there's no Kirsten Dunst, there's no little, there's, and we aren't dealing with little kids either, we're dealing with teenagers. You know, I just think that there were in a place like Hollywood where there are hundreds of thousands of people trying to pitch ideas, you could have found a better one.
I think it's tying it as a direct sequel, they have to do certain things that I don't know if they're ready to accomplish. But
like having one of the kids' names last names be Parrish.
That whole honoring Robin Williams thing and you know, directly referencing it, and they're still in the jungle the whole time. I don't know how they pull that off unless they're gonna pull it off by like they're wearing Parrish sneakers while they're still in the high school or something like that. I mean, if it's something simple like that and they explain why the game is the way it is, I'm fine with it.
This is a movie that is going to come on HBO at 2 in the morning at some point. I mean, this is not something that's going to probably make a whole lot of money because it's opening directly in the path of Episode 8.
Yeah. It comes, Episode 8 doesn't open on Christmas Day. It opens like a week
early. Week and a half.
It's like, and this opens right on Christmas Day. Okay, so they're still trying to catch some overrun. So, it depends on how much their budget is and all that good stuff. But I want to see another trailer just so I can get a feel of the movie. Going the sequel rights, it would have been easier for them to say this is a reboot. I will agree with that. But, you know,
same way with Ghostbusters.
Yeah, and that was a lot of the problems with Ghostbusters, that it was a reboot instead of a sequel where it could have been.
And then you just got cold feet in the middle of production and were like, we need to shoehorn this in because, you know, we need to make grown men feel better.
Yeah. And these are both Sony, right?
Right.
Sony. Okay, so now I want this movie to tank. Because I want Sony's movie division is still hemorrhaging money, and I want to keep hemorrhaging money just enough for Disney to be like,
yeah, the FCC would veto any acquisition of Columbia Pictures, TriStar Entertainment by Disney, because it would just be expanding their library, and they'd own like 3/4 of the library on the planet.
Okay,
and that they'd then be considered a monopoly.
They haven't done a good job of vetoing those things thus far, so I'm going to hope this one squeezes back in. However, I am not a fan of monopolies, so I still want them to lose enough money to be like, look, we just need something. Okay, I'm going to take Spider-Man, and you're going to throw in, let's just say Ghostbusters, just for giggles. You're going to throw that in, too. I'm not paying you extra for it. I just want Spider-Man, and you're going to give me that, too. That's all I want. I want Spider-Man back with Marvel. If Disney has to buy Sony to do it, so be it.
Well, you know what? He's making his way. So the next time you hear from us, we will have just walked out of Spider-Man Homecoming, and we will be giving our thoughts on the return of a very beloved character to the MCU. For Chad, I am Brian. You can follow, if you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow me on Twitter. I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
At The Mitch Theory.
And our good friend T-Bob Abear at T-Bob 53. Thank you very much, and have a pleasant evening.